Hello, welcome to Hoop Collective Podcast. We talk about the NBA, which we are doing. Brace yourself for it. At the stroke of 4 a.m. on Monday morning.
Thanks, Bon Timbs.
Now, why you haven't been introduced yet, which is now a whole production.
True.
Now, why would we be doing this at 4 a.m.? 4 a.m., that's right. We are recording this at 4 a.m. Did a game just end? No, it did not. Tim Montemps has been in Boston for less than an hour. That's why.
Yeah.
I landed in Boston at midnight. Tim Montemps, first off, hello. You were at the Knicks Heat game like literally yesterday.
Yeah.
And you didn't get to Boston until 3 a.m. So here we are.
Here we are. I the one time I tried to follow my wife K Bond's wishes and get a good night's sleep. What do? I'm podding at 4 a.m. and I'm going to sleep for like 2 hours. So there you go. Should have just done what I normally do and not get any sleep and would have been better off. As would have been driving from New York. Also have been better off doing that.
So we were trying to decide whether we were going to do this tonight or not, or, you know, this morning. And we text McMahon and he goes, I'm fine in the Mountain West. So joining us from Denver, where he's covering the Suns in the Nuggets series, it's Ben McMahon.
He's Ben McMahon. He's the fattest dude in all the land. He got Texas blood as thick as mud. He's Ben McMahon.
Howdy, partners.
McMahon's struggling. We should be struggling. It's 4 a.m. It's only 2 a.m. where he is. All right. So yesterday, Steph Curry had an iconic game. there's been a story that's gone on after the game. Draymond Green talked about it on his podcast. I think some other people wrote about it, about this speech that Steph made on Saturday morning. They lost Friday night in game 6. And then before they traveled up to Sacramento, they did this film session. Steph made this speech. Draymond told the story on his podcast, about him. He doesn't speak to the group much. And he's basically like, it was a rah-rah speech. If you're going to get on this bus, you better contribute to winning, et cetera, et cetera. I'm sure it's cool. It would be all, if I got that story, I would have written the hell out of it and all that stuff. But what happened in this game was Steph was like, I'm not relying on any of you guys. I'm taking it myself. Actions over words, right? Well, actions were 38 shots in 38 minutes, 50 points. And the Kings were broken by Steph Curry in that game. And other things happened that were very positive. They got contributions up and down. They hit 15 threes, which is always a good sign. Klay went 4-19 and Wiggins went 5-16. So maybe Curry should have shot even more, but basically Steph Curry was like, I ain't losing this one and I'm going to have my hands on the wheel. And if you want to come with me, come with me. Kevon Looney.
I was going to say every time Steph missed, Looney grabbed the rebound and gave it back to him.
Right. He had 10 offensive rebounds and 11 defensive rebounds, 21 altogether. So McMahon, Bontemps was, I don't know how much you got to see of this because
I watched the whole game.
You had plenty of time while you were waiting for your flight.
I sure did, but I watched it in real time. I got to see the last three quarters. I didn't stop by a Suns practice, but I got to see the last three quarters of this. And is Klay Thompson has to be the first guy in NBA history to go 4-19 and be a +30.
But certainly in a game 7.
Yeah, just a legendary performance by Steph, and we were kind of laughing about it in the group text, like, hey, Steph just became a legend last year. He got a finals MVP so people could at long last acknowledge that this guy's one of the best to ever play the game. And, historically awesome player, had a historically awesome performance in a game 7. Shame that De'Aaron Fox ended with a dud. But the way Steph came out, it didn't matter. The Kings were not going to beat the Warriors with Steph playing like he did today.
Well, and the Warriors won that game because they controlled it from start to finish, and Steph controlled it from start to finish. You know how many fast break points there were total in this game?
I bet you'll tell us.
two.
Hmm.
The yeah. game ground to a halt. The Warriors yeah. made it into a possession by possession game. And Stephen Curry just piece by piece, just dissected the Kings, took them apart. And it, like you said, McMahon, anytime he did happen to miss, or somebody else did, which everybody else missed a lot, Kevon Looney just broke their back over and over and over again with offensive rebounds, extending possessions. I mean, there were two possessions in the third quarter where the Warriors had the ball for like two straight minutes twice and then scored. Like, and the Kings were just completely beaten down from it in the end. But look, it, like McMahon said, at the end of the day, there's been all this talk about, are the Warriors going to be done after this? What's going to happen with them? You know, what's their future going to look like? I looked it up during my interminable wait. The Warriors have won more playoff games than all but two teams have played over the time that they have gone on this run over the past 11 years. The Celtics and Heat have played like 105 and 110. The Warriors have 114, or they've played 114, 110. The Warriors have 105 wins. Like, they have just been the team of the past decade. And Steph today decided that's going to last at least another 4 to 7 games and maybe longer.
And by the way, we can probably stop talking about the road record this year.
Yeah.
They've won 28 in 28 straight series. They've won a road game, and this one they won two, including the game seven. So I think we've got our answer to which crazy road stat do you want to believe? 28 straight playoff series wins, or, you know, whatever it was this year of 11 and 30, I think it was. Yeah, we've got our answer to that.
The regular well, and one other
irrelevant.
And one other real quick stat from Stats Williams from his notes from this game. Warriors had 7 turnovers. Always a sign of when the Warriors are locked in is when they're not throwing the ball around. First time this entire season they've had under 10. So they clearly showed up today focused in a way they weren't on Friday. And as a result, they get to play Lakers on Tuesday.
And that's a good way to keep the Kings from running.
Yes, exactly.
Yes. ESPN Stats and Info said Steph is the second player at age 35 or older to score 200 points in a playoff series. Jordan did it in the 98 conference finals and NBA finals. 200 points in a playoff series. And again, back in 98, when he did that, the game was played at a completely different pace. So it's pretty impressive numbers. You know, the other thing is that the Warriors obviously fell down 2-0 in this series. They won 4 out of 5 coming in. And the game that they lost was a game that they were not focused in. I mean, it was because of the Kings, but they established themselves in this series. And that could be, you know, a factor as we go forward here. I mean, they now, as the sixth seed, their reward for pulling this off is they get home court.
Yeah.
And so as hard as it is to turn around and play, you know, roughly 48 hours later, minor advantage, you're getting to play in the afternoon, but a little more than 48 hours later, they get to go home. And Bontem spent more time on a plane today than the Warriors have in weeks now. So, you know, I think the Kings, certainly, obviously, the what you'd say is they have nothing to feel bad about.
Mm-hmm.
But when you lose a game 7 at home, it's hard. And, you know, you don't blame it because, you know, Steph played great, but they didn't play their best game. They only shot 38%. Really couldn't hit a 3, relatively speaking. Couldn't get a defensive rebound. Domantas Sabonis got worked over by Looney, and it wasn't all him. You know, when it comes to offensive rebounding, there's things that come into play.
It was a lot Sabonis, of him, though. He got outplayed by Kevon Looney.
He did.
And you guys know that I'm a big Sabonis defender. I don't think I have to defend him anymore because he's had such a great year.
You got to defend him for Draymond. Draymond's mad that Sabonis didn't shake hands. You know, Draymond, the has Draymond won the sportsmanship award in his career?
I don't foresee it happening.
Oh, okay. Well, apparently
Draymond should have just pointed at Steph after the game. I mean, he's going to always chatter, but he should have just been pointing at Steph and saying, just talk to that guy today.
Instead, he's pointing at LeBron. He's spent the whole post praising LeBron.
Of course.
Well, the thing about Draymond that was funny was, to me, you know, there was a social media video that the NBA took, and Draymond's walking off the court. You know, the game has just ended, and he's like, he's congratulating the Kings. Well, what a great season, you know, and then but he can't help himself. When he gets near the tunnel, he starts trash talking the fans and saying, light the beam, light the beam. He's literally in the middle of like praising the Kings and he stops himself to trash talk the fans.
I respect that.
Yeah, I know you do. So that's Draymond.
Even Steph did a light the beam thing in that game. I've rarely seen Steph as locked in as he was today from start to finish.
Don't even Steph. Steph is a very polite and, you know, gentlemanly fella who talks a lot of trash. I mean, let's be honest.
Oh, yeah. No, he for sure.
Like, come on. Like, Steph.
For sure.
Steph puts on a show.
For sure. No question. And he's a killer. Much as he tries to, as much as he's portrayed as otherwise.
More Hoop Collective podcast after this.
Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavily on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liquor, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely. You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish. Yes, catch the clutch hits, strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems, but nothing on your roof. So who's ever up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, hoodie teenagers, girl-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, root, root with nothing on your roof. Yes, stream your team. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. So the game you were at yesterday, Bontemps, the Miami Heat, SEAL Team 305.
Unbelievable.
Keep on trucking. The Knicks were obviously felt, in my view, the loss of not having Julius Randle in the regular season. And I know that that's a ridiculous statement to start off with in the regular season because it doesn't matter. But in the regular season, they played four times. The Knicks won three. Julius Randle averaged, I think, 29 points in those games, like 29-11.
Yep.
I don't know how you thought he looked. I watched some video of him working out before the game. You know, he looks better than he did than the other night in Cleveland when he couldn't basically walk. But he was not close to playing, and that was a factor. And then, of course, you know, the Heat are the Heat. And we'll get into Jimmy's injury in a second, but what did you think about that performance?
I mean, I think a lot of it, frankly, just comes down to the fact that the Knicks could not hit a wide open three. They went 7 for 34 from three. Most of them were very wide open. Jalen Brunson, in particular, went 0 for 7, was very critical of himself after the game for that. If the Knicks just hit 35% of their threes instead of 20, they win the game. I think they'll win game two because we basically always see the home team come back and win game two in these series. But my takeaway was, for all that has happened with Kyle Lowry in Miami and all the criticism that's been thrown at him, in game six last year in Boston, it was Jimmy Butler and Kyle Lowry who won that game for the Heat. And Kyle made a bunch of big plays against Milwaukee. And when Jimmy Butler was standing there in the corner, miming catching and shooting the ball because he couldn't move, which, by the way, the Knicks just doing nothing with Jimmy Butler over the final 5 minutes was insane. The Knicks just completely fell apart in the final 5 minutes. But part of the reason they did is Kyle Lowry on the other side, the guy who's had a pretty dramatic reversal of fortune in these kind of moments over the past 8 or 10 years. You go back to where he was in Toronto at the beginning to where he's seen now in these playoff moments. He stepped up and just made a bunch of huge plays. Somehow had 4 blocks in this game. I don't know how he did that.
I don't remember that.
But just made a bunch of shots late, made a bunch of big plays, took over while Jimmy couldn't do anything, and carried these guys to a win. And like you said, I mean, it's just, it was striking being at the two Cavs Knicks games. And it's obviously not fair to compare the Cavs and the Heat because the Cavs have literally never been there and the Heat have only ever been there basically. But it was pretty striking to see just how unfazed Miami was by being at the Garden and playing there with place going crazy compared to what it was like in games 3 and 4, the last series when the Cavs were just shook basically from start to finish in both games.
And now we wait to see what's up with Jimmy's ankle.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, the other thing that just strategically, the Heat, were able to control, not control, but were able to play the offensive boards relatively even. The Cavs got destroyed on the offensive boards. The Heat are not a big team by nature. Kevin Love had some big rebounds where he threw the full court outlet passes, which basically is a counter attack. To like sort of a soccer term, a counter attack to crashing the boards. What basically they're saying is, okay, if you're going to crash the boards offensively, just know that if Kevin Love gets it, he's going to throw touchdown passes. And he got three. I think he got three of them today, Bontemps. So that's a, you know,
he got about this close to a fourth one.
Okay. So that's an interesting. It's especially interesting if you're a Cavs fan.
I was going to say, it's too bad the Cavs couldn't have a guy like Kevin Love on that roster.
That is just is a complicated, it's not a simple discussion, and we're not going to have it right now, but it is a bad look. That's uncomplicated. But basically, the at least game one countermeasure was to use a player that the Cavs jettisoned. And by the way, he made $1 million on the deal to go to the Miami Heat. That was amazing, too. So Jimmy played 43 minutes in this game, which just illustrates how important he is to them. He had a good game. He didn't have 45 like he did the other, you know, whatever, 48 in that game, game six.
Yeah, I think so. Something like that.
He had 25-11 with 4 assists. But obviously he sprained his right ankle late in regulation, and he, after the game, was pretty like, I don't know. He's like, you know, I think it was a fair answer. He's like, I don't know how I'm going to feel in 2 days.
Yeah.
And that is, you know, even if he does, I mean, last year he could barely run on his knee.
With the 3 day gap in the series, you wonder if they sort of say, we won a game in New York. If we can hit a bunch of threes and maybe steal another one, great. But let's give this guy basically a week off and go into game three. I'll be curious to see what they do. Cause I mean, he did essentially nothing the final 5 minutes of the game. I mean, like I said, it was malpractice. The Knicks didn't attack him. More down the stretch. I mean, they had one switch and it was not good.
Well, the thing about it is that Brunson had the ball in his hands. And so Brunson wanted to go to work. He didn't want to pass the ball to whoever Jimmy was guarding.
Well, you know, then bring Jimmy into the screen.
Well, yeah, that they didn't. It was a mess on every front. RJ Barrett had a great start, and then he fell apart. And frankly, Obi Toppin probably should have played down the stretch of this game. He played really well. I mean, look, at the end of the day, if the Knicks go again, they hit 35% of their threes, they win the game. I suspect they're going to hit some more threes and win game two, and then we'll see what happens in Miami. And that's where the series will be decided.
It's about ankle injuries, really. How was Julius Randle's ankle and how was Jimmy Butler's ankle for game two?
Certainly would have been good to have Julius out there to take advantage of Miami's, you know, lack of size. Certainly it's going to look different for him if he can get out there than it was going up against Evan Mobley and Jared Allen. That's for sure.
Absolutely. Okay. So Bontemps and I are here in Boston Monday. 76ers Celtics have game one. Embiid is listed as doubtful. Sprained ligament in his knee. The hope obviously was that the Celtics losing game five to the Hawks here in Boston. By the way, rough night in Boston here tonight with the Bruins losing. Had one of the great seasons in NHL history, regular seasons, and got ousted in the first round.
We're talking hockey on this pod.
Well, I'm just going to say, I was going to say, when I arrived at the game, when I arrived at the hotel, which is very close to the arena, some Bruins fans trash talked me, and I just forgave them
What do they say? Because
I'm not going to go into it. But I forgave them because I knew how tough of a night it was here in Boston.
You should have told them not to take out their frustrations on you in a very pleasant manner.
I'm sure that's what you would have done.
it's a similar night in Denver where the Avalanche also, the defending cup champions, are out in the first round. Let's get into the hockey talk here.
I'm gonna go outside and trash talk some Avalanche fans just for fun.
I mean, you would trash talk the wall, so sure.
I couldn't name one player in either team. So, Bontemps, Celtics were 3-1 against the Sixers during the regular season. It's not the greatest matchup for Philly. They had a huge rest advantage here on them, but if they don't have Embiid, and I think we'll see how he feels tomorrow, but you know, they obviously have to play for the long haul here, you know, at least in this series. If they don't have Embiid and he's not a serious contributor, like, I don't know what we're doing here. Like, this, it's pretty much...
I mean, they if they don't have the light, or I shouldn't say likely, if they don't have the possible MVP of the league, we'll find out Tuesday when the NBA announces it Tuesday night. But whether he's the MVP or a finalist for the MVP award, if he isn't a factor in the series, yeah, then it's going to be a short series. I think that's, you know, that's pretty reductive. I mean, we'll see where he's at. I do think, you know, the extra couple days, I do think helped. I was at practice on Saturday and, you know, people were down a little bit because I think there was a hope he would be able to do some stuff on Saturday. He then was able to do at least some stuff on Sunday, did some shooting, was out on the court. So, you know, I think, you know, the fact that he's doubtful and not out is at least a sign that maybe things could turn around over the next 24 hours. We'll see. But, you know, I think the Sixers are hoping he can get out there by game two. And, you know, maybe they can, you know, they're going to play small. They're going to play fast. It's going to be a ton of threes. And, you know, they'll see what they can do. But yeah, I mean, if Joel just isn't a factor in the series or doesn't come back till game four or something, then yeah, I mean, it already is a tricky matchup, like you said, and it's going to be very hard for them to make it competitive.
I mean, if James Harden still has the capability to just completely dominate a game, this would be a good time to see it.
I got a story coming out about James Harden on Monday that's all about, you know, he said after game four, he came into this year with the mindset to sacrifice money so they could get PJ Tucker and Daniel House, sacrifice shots. He's got the lowest points, field goal attempts, free throw attempts, 3-point attempts of his career since he got to Houston. Like, he, you know, this was all about trying to win. Well, now, if he can ramp it back up, they're going to need it, because whether Joel is back or not, they're going to need James to play better than he did against Brooklyn when he shot 9-for-34 on twos and outside of game three was 4-for-26. Hey, that just ain't going to cut it.
Game one's going to be like a night in Vegas, all the shots he wants.
Well, Maxey's been awfully bad against Boston too, so he's got to be a lot better too in this series.
McMahon is still letting him fly at 2:30 a.m. East Mountain.
That's what he does. That's what he does. Our guy's always ready.
The issue with the way Harden looked in the first round, even though that series with Brooklyn was largely anticlimactic, was that he couldn't get to the line and he couldn't get a shot in the paint. Mm-hmm. So basically what you're left with is Harden having a good 3-point night or not? Because he can distribute, but he's not as effective as a distributor when Embiid is not there. So, it's very possible that, you know, let's say Embiid doesn't play and James hits 6 threes.
Yeah. Like,
that could be a difference making performance. But it's the combination of Embiid potentially being slowed and Harden just hasn't been the same player since the Achilles thing popped up.
Well, really hadn't been the same since he had the hamstring in the playoffs a couple of years ago. You know, I'm looking at his 2-point percentage. Last year, 47.6. This year, 49.5. And you look at, like, when Harden was cooking, like, it was in the mid-50s a lot of those years. 53, 53, 53, 56, 55, 56, 55. He just does not have that same burst. And so that's why he's not able to get in the paint. He's never been a mid-range guy. You know, he's been like the perfect Daryl Morey shot clock or shot chart guy. Never been a mid-range guy. It's always about being able to get to the paint and finish or get fouled, and he just can't get there like he used to. Now, he can still, as you said, get hot from three. He's still one of these, you know, best guys in terms of running the offense, one of the best passers in the league, all that kind of stuff. But I think they need him to have a 35-40-point game, and I just don't know that he has that in him, especially against that defense.
Yeah, I mean, they probably need him and Maxey to combine to score 60 if Joel isn't playing to have a chance to win. Like, they both have to be awesome. And Tyrese has been terrible against Boston. Derek White, Marcus Smart have given him a lot of problems. And Harden's lack of burst against Brooklyn. Brooklyn's a sort of a lesser version of what Boston is without both the rim protection and without quite as good a perimeter defensive talent. So it was going to be a tall task if Joel's 100% healthy. And I just hope that we get to see him on the court early in the series to see if they can make a run at it. It just sucks, frankly, because all he talked about, you know, we talked a bunch about it during the year. All he wanted to do was get through the playoffs healthy and see how it could go. And when you look at the way this has played out with Milwaukee losing, you know, I mean, the winner of this series is going to be the very, very, very heavy favorite to make it to the finals. And they're going to have the home court advantage in the finals, too. So it just would be a shame if we don't get to see him anywhere close to full go in this series, which I'm not sure is going to be the case. But, you know, certainly the fact that we're looking at him being doubtful for game one is not a great start.
So real quick, you mentioned that the NBA announced the MVP will be announced on Tuesday. This was a real curveball because as the Bontemps poll projected, Embiid had the lead at the end. He obviously had a good finish at the season. And again, I trust the Bontemps poll.
The BS poll.
But it's unusual for a player to be announced as the MVP when he's not at home. And Tuesday is an off day in Boston. The Philadelphia 76ers will be in Boston. And the next day, it'd be one thing if he was announced on an off day and the next day there's a home game. The next day is game two. And so that has caused a hesitation.
So, but if that's your theory, then
Jokic, not my theory.
Yes, it is. then Jokic won't be at home either. They'll be heading to,
I agree.
Practicing. is this going to be a Giannis Dirk MVP? Is that what you're getting at?
No, I'm not getting at that. I think I trust.
Here's the deal. TNT announces all the awards. They have games on Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. So the only day they could realistically announce it and have it be up in the air who could win it is Tuesday, because they're not going to have Joel take the award and then walk out and play on Wednesday or not play either way. Mm-hmm. They couldn't do that in Monday's game either.
Well, he'll get the award Friday in Philly if he wins it. Adam Silver,
I'm just saying they do these, they've done all of these pressers set up in a way where it hasn't been announced half an hour before the guy plays in the game or two hours before a guy plays in the game.
That's right.
So
that's
they had to do it with Jokic and Embiid both playing Monday with them both playing Monday. They had to do it Tuesday one way or the other because we have games from Thursday through the end of the week. So Tuesday was the only day to announce it. I'm not saying that means Joel's going to win or not. It was very close. I could see it going a bunch of ways. If I had to guess, I would say Joel wins. But I think it's close enough that Jokic or Giannis, or especially Jokic, could win. But I don't think that the fact that it's Tuesday is some sort of secret tell of how it's going to go.
Right, but people are wondering about it.
And people are wondering about it, yes.
You have just given a reasonable explanation as to why that is. So we'll see. It didn't used to be this way. It used to be that they would announce it sort of in the middle of the day, but then TNT had the award show, and nobody liked the idea of waiting until June, late June, to hear all these awards. So they brought back the awards being rolled out over the first two rounds. The real drama, though, will be, I assume, later this week or early next week when the All-NBA team is announced. that will be the real drama. Well, it's some drama for the MVP, but the real drama will be for the All NBA team, and with a couple of players. We've talked about it a lot.
More Hoop Collective podcast after this.
Vivid Seats wants you to get to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seat Rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code HOOP. That's code HOOP, H-O-O-P. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats, experience it live. Winning is an everyday mindset, and on the Ways to Win podcast, coaches Craig Robinson and John Calipari are here to help. Each week, Craig and Coach Cal use their on-court wisdom to solve your off-court problems. Whether it's trouble at home or a workplace dilemma, the coaches will help you find a winning formula for success. And you'll hear from prominent athletes, business leaders, and celebrities who reveal insights that made them into the leaders they are today. Like President Obama, who breaks down his bracket and talks about how he deals with pressure by projecting confidence, believing in your team, and taking criticism. Listen to Ways to Win wherever you get your podcasts. Game two, also Monday night for you, McMahon. Nuggets with a very, I think it's probably the most impressive the Nuggets have looked since the All-Star break. I can't testify to every single moment of every single game, but from start to finish against a team that had been 12-1 with Durant and Booker, and still actually shot the ball extremely well. Very impressive performance from the Nuggets, and reminded everybody about why they had the number one seed after 5 months of play.
Yeah, and you certainly can't testify to the vast majority of the Nuggets' performances given your league pass issues, but I do agree with what you're saying. And Jamal Murray, dude, I understand why the bubble Murray thing annoys him, because that's a cute little nickname that indicates there was a little bit of a fluke factor in the bubble.
Well, also indicates he's not healthy from the knees. Sort of like, well, you'll never be Bubble Murray again. I mean, that's, well, you know.
But he is.
Here's the thing, though. It was kind of a fluke. Jamal Murray's never made an All-Star team. He's never made an All-NBA team. He's never come anywhere close to playing in his career like he did in the bubble. That was the guy who everybody has always thought he had the capability of being, and he's never really been that guy. And now we're back in the playoffs, and he's turning into this guy again. And if he plays like that for the next 6 weeks, Denver very may well win the title. But this is not who he has always been. He's been a good to very good player that's never been anywhere near an elite top end guard in the NBA.
He is in the playoffs.
It's a matchup 11. Problem.
He's 39 career games, had 11 30-point performances, and it is a matchup problem, Wendy.
Yeah, that's a great stat, by the way. I hadn't heard that. That's a great stat.
Yeah, the only Nuggets who have had more are Alex English, Jokic, and Carmelo, and he's one behind Carmelo.
It's pretty good.
Shout out Stats and Info.
So, okay. So Phoenix last round started Torrey Craig as their fifth starter. And they did that because they were preparing to defend Kawhi Leonard and his size. And Torrey Craig was awesome in that series. I think he shot in the neighborhood of 60% on threes. Certainly a small sample size, five games. They switched to Josh Okogie. You know, you go through a series 4-1 where the guy who's in the starting lineup shooting 60% on threes, you may want to leave the guy in there, but they are worried about the matchup for Jamal Murray. And so Monty Williams, rightly so, Monty Williams changed his lineup, put Okogie in. Not that Okogie is advertised as some, you know, all world defender, but he is a better matchup to defend a smaller guard. And Murray cooked the Nuggets.
And look, Murray is, as Monty pointed out, like there were some shots, it's just like, Jesus, this guy, like you can't do anything about it. But they let him get in a rhythm, and he just was in a rhythm. Let him get rolling early, let him get in a rhythm, and they never got him out of it. And look, this is, you talk about it being a matchup problem. This is one of the times, and like you look at who you're going to have to go through in the West, it might not be the only time, but this is one of the times where Chris Paul's inability at his age to defend his position really hurts. Chris Paul cannot, he's got no hope. He can't move well enough anymore. You have to hide him defensively. You have to put him on the worst player on the other team, and the guy who stands in the corner. He can't, especially run off all the dribble handoffs with Jokic on. He has no hope. So you have to put, your fifth star, because you can't ask Devin Booker to run around all game playing 44, 45 minutes and then guarding Jamal Murray. Obviously, you can't ask KD to do it. So you have to have either Craig or Koji do it, and neither of them are particularly well-suited, I don't think. It'll be very interesting, though, Wendy, as you're kind of alluding to see if they go back to Torrey Craig.
Yeah, so after the game in the locker room the other night, when they knew that the Nuggets had won the series and the Suns knew they were playing, going to go to Denver, Chris was sort of lamenting to his teammates. He's like, boy, I'm going to be going through 1,000 ball screens in this series. Mm-hmm. And Monty was like, hold on there, sir. You may not, because he doesn't like the matchup, and rightly so. The other thing about this, the Suns have shot over 50% as a team in the games that Durant and Booker have played together. So they shoot 51% in this game and lose by 20.
Well, they had a big time math problem in this game, as KD pointed out, but KD very summed it up very quickly. Field goals, 101 to 84, 3-point attempts, 37-23. Obviously they lost the possession game, they lost the turnover battle, they lost the rebounding battle. You can't take 14 fewer threes and 17 fewer shots from the floor and have a chance to win. And
even in today's day and age, it's hard to get up 100 shots in a game, when you shoot and you get fouled, it doesn't count as a shot attempt. So,
Joker did have some Moses Malone. He had a couple of Moses Malone possessions. You look at his stash, God, he was a beast on the board. He's like, yeah, it's kind of on two possessions, but still.
Well,
it's more the 3-point disparity, 37-23. And as much as the Suns have three of the best mid-range shooters of this generation, everybody on that team acknowledged we've got to get up more threes. And how do you do it? Monty said, hey, we've got to be willing to kind of get off the ball, like get it to Ayton on the short roll, let him make plays at the backside. KD and CP3 both said, we've got to play faster. A lot of our threes come out in transition. We were playing too slow. Now I asked KD today, hey, is it a challenge to play faster when you're playing 40 some odd minutes? I didn't even mention the altitude, but when you're playing that many minutes, and he didn't want to hear that. He tried to, it's just good conditioning. But I got to imagine that it is.
Well, Durant had 7 turnovers also, which I don't think is going to keep happening. But
when he pointed that out, he said, we can't win with me having 1 assist and 7 turnovers.
Well, look, him and Book both shot the ball great, but they took 38 shots combined. They scored 56 points. I would be fine with that every game if I'm Denver. And they shot a combined 4 3-point attempts. Jamal Murray was 6-for-10. You put those two guys and Chris Paul together, they're 2-for-9. I go back to what we talked about after that Dallas game. I would be very happy. You look at the way this box score plays out, let Kevin Durant shoot, let Devin Booker shoot. Don't let these other guys get up threes. I just think Denver's going to win the math problem in this series. Because by the way, last series they played the Clippers, and the Clippers had all their guys out, could barely score. Denver's going to be scoring a ton of points every game. Like, they're one of the best offenses we've ever seen in the league.
When you're saying let them shoot, you're not saying give them open shots. You're saying let them play one-on-one, my turn, your turn type of basketball where nobody else is really touching it.
Yes, to be clear, right. It's not just like, hey, let KD and Devin Booker take practice.
You're not
shots.
Guarding them like the Dylan Brooks.
No, not guarding them like the Dylan Brooks. No. But I would live with letting those guys eat as much as they want, and I'd single cover them and let them shoot. And if they're going to shoot 40, 45, 50 times every game, like, I just don't buy that they can hold up doing that over 7 games. And I don't think they're going to shoot enough threes that even if they hit a lot of shots, they're going to win the math problem. And you look at the rest of the roster, they had a combined 26 points from the rest of these guys on the Suns. Like, I,
it's just going to be very hard for them, I think, to keep up with Denver. I'm talking about outside the core four guys, not including Aiden. We've talked about their four good players and then everybody else. Everybody else gave them basically nothing.
And Wendy, this will shock you, but Monty called out Aiden for not playing with Force today.
Well, that never happens.
Yeah, well, I mean, he was minus 21 in his minutes.
I thought it was accurate, but it also is not surprising. And I said, well, how do you define Force with him? And he said, is he running the floor? Is he rolling hard, after screens? And what's his crash rate offensively, crashing the offensive glass? He said they like it to be like 60 to 70% of the time he's crashing the glass. On this one, it was way, way, way low that.
Well, even more important to me for that is his defense on Nikola Jokic. We've always seen him as a guy who has been good on Jokic in the past, and he was not very good on defense in game one. Needs to be a lot
better.
Well,
that's the Aiden experience, as any Suns fan will tell you. All right, well, it's getting on until it's 5 a.m. here. Let's talk real quick about this Lakers, this potentially spectacular Lakers-Warriors series, LeBron versus Steph. AD versus Looney, I guess Looney earns that spot with 21 rebounds and Draymond. Lakers got a couple extra days to rest. It's huge, shorter flight. I would advise the Lakers to try to come out like the house is on fire in game one and try to get up on them, try to take advantage of the lingering after effects. Because one of the things we've seen about this Warriors team this year, and one of the things that Steph talked to them about, was their sort of shaky focus. And they did win in Golden State earlier this year. They had some, they won the season series against the Warriors. And so they need AD to be great. They need AD to dominate that matchup. They need him to put up high points and high rebounds. They need him to put up high minutes. And to me, even though this is LeBron and Steph can be focused, a lot of this is going to come down to AD's production, in my opinion, just, seeing it today.
AD against the Grizzlies, that's one of the most dominant defensive series I've seen by an individual. I don't think he can have the same type of defensive impact against the Warriors. The reason I say that is because the Grizzlies are a team that relies so heavily on attacking the paint. Where, the Warriors are obviously a different type of offensive team. But AD in that series, he had a couple of duds offensively, but defensively, I don't know if he could have played much better.
No, he was a monster. And they need him to be their best player again in this series. I think you sum it up, Brian. There's going to be, all understandably, a lot of focus on Steph and LeBron. But if AD is the best player on the Lakers, that'll give them a puncher's chance of winning the series. I do think, because they played a Memphis team with their two bigs out and with, as Tim said, all these guys that attack the rim, not a lot of shooting, not refusing to play Luke Kennard most of the time, and then he got hurt right when they decided to start playing him. It's a whole different animal going up against this Warriors team. I have no idea how they're going to guard Steph. Good luck with that. They put Dennis Schroeder on him. That's probably not going to work great.
You don't think getting to a Russell can guard him?
I don't think that will go very well. And I think the Warriors will probably delight in going up against D'Angelo Russell based off their history with him. And they have a lot of guys that they can throw at LeBron on the wing too. So I don't think it's a great matchup for them. But that said, again, this does, I think, really come down to AD. If AD is awesome and consistently awesome in this series, I think it could be a long series. If he's anything less than that, because the other thing we haven't really focused on a lot because of how ugly that Grizzlies-Lakers series was, this goes back to the math problem thing with the Suns series. I think it's going to be hard for the Lakers to keep up with Golden State offensively. They're going to need these other guys to hit shots. And like Golden State did today, they need to, I think, try to turn it into a grinded-out game where LeBron and AD are kind of, blasting into them and turn it into a rock fight where the Lakers get to the foul line because the Warriors never do. If they do that, I think they can hang around.
Well, I think they need former Warriors great D'Angelo Russell to have an awesome shot-making series.
That's true. Which sort of complete X-factor guard is going to play better in the series, Jordan Poole or D'Angelo Russell?
Jordan Poole was an absolute disaster in the first round, man.
Yeah, Russell, I mean, game six, like, all the Lakers were awesome, but Russell, and it was funny because Kyrie was sitting courtside, so Russell basically said, no, you don't need to sign that guy. Watch me hit a bunch of these shots.
Well, by the way, those three threes he hit in game four were huge.
Yeah. No,
those were massive shots in the fourth quarter.
He was impactful in that series. He was definitely impactful in that, and they need that for sure.
Yeah, well, there's a lot that we're going to be talking about with that series coming up, but we got to get Jackson hopefully to bed before dawn here. I don't know if it's going to happen. So thank you to Jackson Ajello, who made this possible by
Jackson's staying. The MVP. He's the real MVP, as Katie once said.
Yeah. So thank you to Bontemps. Should we thank Bontemps McMahon? I don't think we should.
No. Absolutely not.
It's not like it was my fault
next time.
Thank you, listen to Hoop Collective Podcast. We'll talk to you in a couple hours.
Adios, amigos.